Welcome to the 20th episode of the Nonstop Podcast with Pooja. With me, I have Daimanta. She is a very impressive person. She's a Vilnius City Councillor. And also, she is a PhD at law student. Welcome to the podcast, Daimanta.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's actually really interesting for me as an individual who's been so passionate with law to have this meeting with you and to learn about what exactly that you're doing in this field, not just as a doctorate researcher, but also as a young politician. So how did you get into politics and what really interested you?
Well, I think that I found inspiration in Lithuanian history. And now we're sitting in Vilnius, which is capital of Lithuania. And historically, we've been like a kingdom, a country. We also had a commonwealth state with Poland. But during 20th century, we were for almost five decades occupied by the Soviet Union. So we were not free. And Lithuanian people, they were subject to repressions, mass deportations. For example, my great-grandfather and my grandfather, they were both deported to Siberia, which is in Russia, in the lands of ice, to work, just because, you know, they had different political opinion, or, you know, they had more property than others. So this was the life that we were living as Lithuanians for many years, 150 years ago. And in Lithuania, we got our independence in 1990. And well, me personally, I represent the generation that was born in free Lithuania. But I also know from my personal experience and from my family's experience that, you know, we can't take this freedom for granted. Like, we need to fight for it. And since we're finally free, we can shape our lives. I think that inspired me, that, you know, I'm living in this period where we can get involved, we can get into politics, and we can make the future better. So that's what really inspired me when I was a child. And naturally, I joined youth political organizations. I was active there, both at local, national, international level, like organizing protests for some issues, also working with matters related to Ukraine or Belarusian opposition, helping them in their countries, also getting involved in the matters related to education. And well, I did this while I was at school, and in 2018, I was invited to run for the city council by the, at that moment, mayor of Vilnius, and I said yes.
I think not very often that you, as a student, get invited to run with the mayor, but that's very inspiring. And not just to know that you had great aspirations because of the harsh historic conditions, suppression, but it's also very, you know, relevant to know what really is the future for youth in politics, right? Because politics on a whole, in whole of the world, I can say on an average, that it's perceived for much older generation. Of course, you know, with age comes wisdom. And but what do you think is refreshing need to have the youth in politics or political parties?
Mm-hmm. Well, so first, young people in Lithuania, they represent a generation which was born in free Lithuania. So naturally, we have a different mindset than the previous generations, which were shaped by the Soviet regime and Soviet Lithuania. And because of that, I think that young people are perceived as like more liberal, more Western, more open-minded. And well, we bring that kind of values to politics. Well, and second of all, I think that young people, they also, they're more familiar with the issues of education, what kind of issues like young people are facing in general, in terms of economic uncertainties. So it's important to have young people in politics because they can, you know, not only bring a different mindset, but also bring other kind of issues, because, you know, politics, it is related to, you know, your personal experience. Usually politicians, they work in the fields in which like they have some sort of, I don't know, story behind, or they just worked in that field and they want to, contribute to that field. And then from the political level, so I think that young people in general, they can, push policies which are for young people, and because they're just know more about it.
Yeah, I think it's, again, you know, it's also very quite an unusual thought that, you know, you are a very independent country, young independent country, and it only rightly sits that you have younger politicians. But how do you think Lithuania prior to independence operated? Of course, it operated with a strong force like the Soviet Union, a lot of stricter policies, not necessarily for the benefit of the economy or the people. And now a lot of things have changed since your entry with the European Union. How do you see Lithuania as a country? Do you see it on par with the Western countries? How do you feel you're perceived in the European Parliament? Mm-hmm. Of course, as an outsider, as a foreigner who's lived here for a while, I can see that it's quite prosperous. But at the same time, we are not entirely sure the struggle that you still put up in the European Parliament. Have you participated in these parliamentary sessions, and how was it for you?
Where to start? Lithuania, always more or less, after regaining independence, we positioned ourselves as somebody which, you know, knows the East, but also is part of now Western society, because we're members of NATO, members of European Union since 2004. And we positioned ourselves as a bridge. Like, we always communicated about the threats, about Russia, which now are sadly realized, in Ukraine, with the full scale invasion that started 3 years ago. We were pushing, former Soviet countries to get them to Western world. So like we helped Ukraine, I don't know, Georgia in the past, and we were very local that they need to be a part of European societies and European organizations. So we always positions ourselves as, you know, in this international scale as speakers about that kind of matters. But also Lithuania, since we're a small country, it's very easy to implement to various digital reforms. So while we have a good startup ecosystem, we now in Lithuania have, I think, around almost 1,000 startups. We also have unicorns, which companies which have like more than are estimated to be worth more than 1 billion. So we have a few companies like that. I don't know, probably some of you heard Vinted for secondhand clothing, or NordVPN. These are our companies. Revolut is also established here, headquarters. So we're also like a digital country, and we're communicating, we're contributing to this digital debate also in the EU. So I would say that nowadays, like, these are the questions that we're working on international level.
I think it's good to know, you know, as a smaller country, still you have much relevance. And I feel that, you know, with level of intensity in terms of the population ratio, it's also very differently perceived in terms of budgeting or in terms of voting rights. How does the European Parliament work? And what level of presence does Lithuanian people or market have? Or do you feel that it's just a level playing field where you just, you know, vote on most European legislations? You have, for instance, I come from, you know, a different part of the world, obviously, and things work very differently in India. For example, we have the states, and then we have the unions, and then we have the center. So the power is kind of centralized. Mm-hmm. However, the states have their own independent rights, and they draw budget from the union as well. So how does it really work for Lithuania? How much of the European Union support is working? Mm-hmm. And how much more do you think is needed to, say, grow another 300%? Because I read that Lithuania grew 300% since its entry with European Union and the WTO.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, give us some stats, approx.
Okay, so well, you ask about the political influence and how decisions are being made. So yes, as we are members of European Union, some decisions are taken on EU level, especially the ones which relate to, let's say, economy, like free movement of goods, free movement of services, and so on. But it's also the national parliament and the councils in the municipalities which basically make the decisions affecting like Lithuania. So it's EU, then national level, we have Lithuanian parliament, we have the government, the president, and then municipal level. With regards to like the influence that Lithuania as a small country, because like we only have 3 million people, so we're considered to be like one of the smaller countries in European Union. What kind of influence we do have? Well, we do have an influence because we have like representatives in the parliament and the commission. We have a commissioner as all member states. It is also the council. We're represented in council, which is one of the bodies making the decisions in European Union. I would say that's the presence. We have the presence as of course members holding full rights to this project.
Yeah, so as a youth parliamentarian, as a youth, politician, and as a citizen, what do you think are the recent reforms or laws that you are very proud of that Lithuania has stepped outside the traditional or the conventional mentality of a Soviet, pre-Soviet occupied, country and now a very liberal European Union country?
Recently, there was a ruling on Constitutional Court, which basically de facto legalized same-sex partnership. And I think it's an important law because Lithuania didn't have such law. Because of the decision that the Constitutional Court made, now couples who are of the same sex, they are able to register their partnership. Of course, this is being done by the courts, but I think that the looking at the past year, I would rate that kind of change as number one change in Lithuania.
I think that's good to hear. And what countries, as a youth politician, as you have some sort of aspirations like for Lithuania, for example, do you admire any politician from other European countries, who are younger or of any age for that matter, who has really been a spokesperson for, younger countries in the European Union, or for you, a personal favorite?
I need to think about it. Well, the person that usually Lithuanian young females look up is probably our former president Dalia Grybauskaitė, who's been the first commissioner at the European Union representing Lithuania and later served 2 terms. She was very vocal about Russia and the threat, and she really participated in international debate. Like, as I mentioned, Lithuania positions herself as between someone who knows peace but also is member of the West. So I think that she did a really great job in that kind of aspect. But well, of course, there are many politicians in Lithuania and in other countries. It would be like a large list to mention.
Yeah, I think that's pretty interesting as well to understand. So, is there anything else that you'd say that you're working on at the moment or presently as a part of your party, that you feel that it's necessary to speak on?
As I mentioned, I worked in Vilnius City Council. Vilnius City Council is a like a body which represents people living in the capital of Lithuania, Vilnius. Well, we have multiple issues that we are working on, but my particular area of expertise, where I've been working for the last now 6 years, because I'm right now serving my second term, is night economy. So night economy is well, everything what is happening after 7 p.m. and until 7 a.m. So it's activities related to bars, to cultural venues, and so on. And I've been working in this field. So like what I managed to push for is night buses. So we introduced night buses. So people living not in the center, they can enjoy and participate in activities which are happening at night. Also, we recently established agency working with that kind of matter. So we have like a body which is making strategy, implementing it. Now we're also building a huge stadium in Vilnius. So I also pushed to open a library that would work in that stadium during the night because, well, it was part of the project having that kind of library, but I pushed for having it work for 24 hours. So there are like multiple things that we're doing, and I'm working on that as well.
Yeah, I think it's super cool, right? Like, cool is the right word, you know, being still very young, literally, and you are directly involved in some of the decisions that bring light to your city. So as a young politician, my final question, probably on politics, is where would you like to see an increase in budget, even within the city municipality? Where do you think that it could be good, you know, to have a budget increase on certain areas of work?
Well, so one of the topics in Lithuania, which are quite relevant, relates to security, because we're a country which is bordering Russia, and we're the country which Russian political elite hates, because we were the country which basically exited the Soviet Union in late 80s first, and well, 90s. And we constantly hear threats towards from Russia towards Lithuania. So we're in a difficult geopolitical situation right now. And Vilnius city as municipality, like, we're not working on safety, like related matters, geopolitical matters, but we're still taking care of, I don't know, shelters. We can communicate to the millions what you should have like in your house if day X comes and Russia, I don't know, attacks Lithuania. So I would say that we really need to work on security in Vilnius and do the job from municipality part as well. So I would say that would be an important issue where we should see a budget increase.
Yeah, I think that's, that's one of the more relevant things. And I think it's very important that you're paying attention to this. And in today's geopolitics, I think it's also not very soothing that things are not in the wrong side of the history, to say the least. And a few of all, people in the nation around the world and understand that the relevance of possibly being neighbors to such an intense country, both in terms of security threat. So where does your, of course, I know that your thoughts or where your, you know, your probably your aspirations lead to, but is there a sense in the community or on a survey that you take, of course, you're doing as much as you can to increase your security budgets, but how do you feel do you feel there is a sense of the past repeating, or the general population feels very confident and ease, and you see that a lot more Lithuanians who left the country are coming back?
After the full-scale invasion and the war in Ukraine started, of course, many people in Lithuania, they were frightened. And I remember my grandma, she told me a story that basically her neighbor, what she started to do when she heard the news, like, she brought like a lot of things into the basement. She started to dry the bed, the bread, to have like breadcrumbs to eat. So, you know, people, they were really scared, and especially the older generation, you know, they, some of them experienced the war, the old ones, or they you know, their parents experienced the war. So, you know, they just automatically started preparation for the day X. But of course, right now we're still feeling the threat, but you know, you get used to that kind of threat. So it's not like that we're thinking about it every day. And well, of course, some Lithuanians after the full-scale invasion, they got really scared. They even started to sell their, I don't know, apartments or property. But generally, I'm not thinking, I don't think that it really affects the migration, because, well, migration is increasing. In Lithuania, both Lithuanians are returning. The Lithuania who immigrated before, we see that from the statistics. We also have migration from, south, from Asia to some extent. People are coming also from Belarus, the oppositioners. We have also population of Ukrainian people who ran from the war as refugees. So I would say that Vilnius is currently like growing, and we're having more and more people. So we're like a city which is growing.
I think that's good to know. So now let's just jump into the next part of the topic of discussion, which is more towards what you're doing apart from your political career. You are studying to be a doctorate and you're presently researching. And what are you researching on, and why do you feel it's relevant?
Okay, well, I'm researching EU legislative framework, like EU laws of European Union on artificial intelligence. And some of you know, some not, that the European Union was the first legislator to legislate laws on artificial intelligence in the world. And we have both laws which are dealing with the security. So we're setting the rules like how artificial intelligence should be made, so it wouldn't harm the human rights, it wouldn't pose challenges to human dignity or to security, health. So we have a law which basically sets the rules like what companies need to do when they're designing AI-related products. And we also have right now laws which are dealing with the damage. So like there's a debate like what happens if artificial intelligence, let's say, well, causes damage. I don't know, you buy a product and then the product gives you, I don't know, wrong advice or something like that. And as a result of that, you suffer. So European Union will always also legislate that kind of law, which would deal with damage compensation. And in my research, I'm like covering these EU laws on artificial intelligence. And I'm looking more into like the aims and the goals, what we're basically trying to achieve. What are the economic, non-economic aims? So like I'm working in this field. And well, of course, I think that kind of topic is important because, well, artificial intelligence, it can bring a lot of good things, but bad things as well. So I'm just trying to understand like the normative logic behind that. Like what was the political motivation? What are the aims that we're achieving? And what kind of society after society which uses artificial intelligence, like what we're trying to do in that?
And what are your thoughts on the EU AI upcoming legislation? And what do you feel is the pros that are coming in by having effect of this legislation? And what do you feel is the need of the hour?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so right now EU, like it finished its legislative process. So we already have laws in place. They're not yet in force, but will be quite soon. And of course, there is this huge debate if it's a good thing to have laws which regulate relatively new technology or not. And of course, US and China, they're complaining, especially United States, they're complaining because like what essentially we're doing with these laws, we're regulating American companies. So of course, they are not happy about it. And there's a lot of criticisms from their side. But I think that the benefit to have laws on EU level relates to the fact that, well, European Union as a project is a is also economic project. So like what we want to achieve in European Union by having like having European Union as an institution, as a union, confederal union, we are basically trying to create an area without frontiers for people can easily move. We can, you know, it is capital as well. Companies also can establish easily. It doesn't matter if you're Lithuanian or Latvian or, I don't know, French. You can move to anywhere you want. And also, it's a free movement of goods and services that the European project is basically creating. So we need, at least this is how European Union rationalizes having the laws, but these laws they're being understood as something that creates one standard for the goods and services, AI-related goods and services in European Union. And because like we have that kind of laws, there are like no frontiers. So member states, they cannot say, no, I cannot accept AI made in France because it doesn't comply with, I don't know, let's say Lithuanian standards. We cannot do that anymore. So basically, like these kind of rules, they are creating like one single market. And this is the benefit of EU. So we are participating in this global race. We're able to be like a, I don't know, 600 million people market because of having that kind of rules. And that's not necessarily bad than for the business, because instead of, I don't know, complying with 27 standards on how the requirements relating to artificial intelligence, companies, they can only like comply with one standard because we have a European standard.
And I know this is a very twisted question to ask. How do you feel the GDPR kind of fits in with AI regulation? Or do you feel like it's too complete school of information, and you feel that a company necessarily complying with GDPR, even if it's an AI company, will not fall under the next bracket? Or do you feel like it's very two different paddles?
So I'm not an expert of GDPR, which is basically like a law which regulates data. Well, of course, AI Act, because it is a safety law, like law how AI products should be made, is a different from GDPR, because GDPR deals with data, and of course you use data to make artificial intelligence. So there is overlap, but like these are two separate laws to which like the AI producers need to comply with.
I think that makes sense. So actually, something came to me because we have previously had a relationship as well. I was your coach when you were a student in legal competitions. And I just realized that once you shared with me a very fun campaign that you did, and I forgot to include this as a part of your political agenda questions. So you did a campaign on Tinder, which is a dating app. And it's quite interesting. And did you then find out that a lot of people in Lithuania use Tinder, because that was in fact a genius, indigenous idea?
Okay, yeah. So I did a campaign. I organized a campaign on Tinder when I was running for the first time to the Vilnius City Council, because in Lithuania we have elections, like public elections, so all people, you need to go and like write your name or I don't know, vote for the list. So like there is a competition between politicians, and I was not working, of course, alone. I had a very great team, and the team will basically suggested to organize campaign to get more attention on Tinder dating app. So like, but like what we did, we I used it, I wrote down that I'm a candidate and that I'm not using it for the dating part. I'm using it just to communicate with the voters, so they can like have this untraditional way of expressing their, I don't know, political preferences, ideas. Like what we did, we made screenshots of my profile and then send it to a famous show on YouTube, and they made that show with me, and of course they were like portraying it in a comedian comedic way, like they were making jokes about it. But that's how like I got a lot of attention, and I got into like national TV, national newspapers and media, and like we managed to create this buzz. And well, I basically said that we did this thing for a purpose. We knew that, you know, we can be portrayed as, I don't know, some sort of joke, but this got attention, and attention is most important currency in politics. And for a young person, it's really hard to get that kind of political attention. So what they did, I used the story to communicate about my ideas and the questions that are that I'm pushing forward. So it was definitely a success story and a good method of, I think, political communication.
And that's super cool and good to know. I said cool twice because there are very many cool things you're doing. But this has been a very interesting talk. So towards the end of every podcast, I ask the guests, what is their favorite book and what's the movie that changed their life? It need not be one. It can be several. So indulge us.
Yeah. Well, since I'm coming from Lithuania and I'm as well from Vilnius, I want to spread the word about Lithuanian culture. I have a couple of favorite books by Lithuanian authors, which are translated into English. So, there is a series of book called The Silva Rerum by Kristina Sabaliauskaitė, who wrote about Baroque Vilnius. It is translated to many languages, so it's easily accessible in English. Also, Richardas Gavelis, another author who wrote a book called Vilnius Spoker. It is a book which a little bit resembles George Orwell's 1984, because it has this like thematic of control, of Soviet control, because it takes place and still in Soviet Lithuania, and particularly Soviet Vilnius. So I think if you're also interested in that part of history and want to find out more about like Lithuania and how it looked like to live under Soviet regime, which is a totalitarian regime controlling everything what you do, I would say that you should really read Vilnius Poker book. In terms of the movies, there is a recent I forgot the name of it. Nova Lituanica is the name. It is a recent movie directed by Lithuanian, and the action takes place in interwar Lithuania, so between the First and the Second World War. And of course, like, Lithuania understands that there are like a lot of threats in that period that we can be occupied, because in the interwar period, Lithuania was an independent country. So the movie, it shows like political theorist who came up with an idea to establish a Lithuania in, I don't know, Africa, let's say, Madagascar. So, like, the movie portrays how it's pushing this idea, because, like, if we're occupied, we can have a backup state. So it's also an historically interesting movie I would recommend.
Super cool. Again, very cool. So thank you very much for talking with me, coming on the podcast, and having so many inspirational and inspiring and amazing things that you're doing, not just for your city, but for your country. And with your research, I hope you can contribute that to a larger scale of the continent. I wish you very best. Once again, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.